Let me tell you about Moo.com. Promo code Drinking Bros. Gonna get you 20% off your first order over there. Did you know there's an online cannabis store that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. Whether that's the magic mind gummies for deep work and creativity, the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for the action at every turn. And touch into a full body experience over there. Listen, I love the night-night gummies, as I call them, the sleepy time gummies. I take, right now they're 15 milligrams. I cut it in half, and I take half a night. 15 minutes, dude, you are gone. I've never had anything like it. 15, 20 minutes tops, and I'm out. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, gas stations, whatever. Mood's functional gummies, though, combine premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. Plus, Texas Governor Abbott just said it was all right to get these shipped through the mail. He vetoed the bill down here. Thank God. So order from mood.com today. Use that promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off your first order. Everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the promo code Drinking Bros. So head on over to mood.com. Find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Don't forget to use the promo code Drinking Bros when you check out to save 20% off your first order. Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with the help of Hims. They provide access to personalized treatments so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Yeah, 3 to 6 months. That's it, kids. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop hair loss and regrow your hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of your own home. Fill out an intake form, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. The process is 100% online, which means getting started has never been more convenient. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Plus, treatment options start at $35 per month. Hims has helped hundreds of thousands of men get their confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/drinkingbros. That is hims.com/drinkingbros for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/drinkingbros. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Life on the front lines requires you to step up your game. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax has designed just the right supplements for you and is offering Drinkin' Bros an exclusive offer. Buy one, get one free on your first order. Go to CardoMax.com and use the promo code DB. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max.
Yeah, welcome to Drinkin' Bros, kids. Lately, we've had some of the most fascinating people on the planet here. Today is no exception. Today, D'Anthony, we have Arnold Steven A.J. Jacobs Jr. I like to go by full government legal names. Are you fine with that, A.J.?
Absolutely. But don't forget the junior. I'm Arnold Steven Jacobs Jr.
Oh, I got the junior in there. I would not leave out a junior. I love a good junior. Nothing gets me off than a good junior in this world. Would it be fair to classify you as like a gonzo journalist?
Sure, gonzo. I've been called stunt journalist, immersion journalist, if you are being more polite. But yeah, whatever you want to call me, I don't care. I just like to do these experiments and write about them.
Yeah, before we came on the air, I was chatting with you a little bit offline, and I just said, you know, forgive me if I fan out. I used to read all your stuff back in the day in like Esquire and all that other stuff. You would actually go and live the life of the stories that you were writing. And I was fascinated by it. Like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, who the fuck is this guy? I didn't actually know what you look like until today, to be totally real.
Well, there you go. Hope not too disappointing. But no, yeah,
it's super disappointing.
He already said that Junior's turn him on. So
yeah.
I don't know what the exact fuck.
No, it's super disappointing. Enough. I pictured like a Hunter S. Thompson or a Hemingway, you know, and I think we got a Jewish guy from New York probably, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, I do drink. I don't take as many drugs as Hunter Thompson, but I do drink and battle depression like Hemingway. So I got that going for me. But I would say I for Esquire, I did a bunch of things. I did one where I did radical honesty for a month. I don't know if you remember that article.
So the radical honesty was crazy, right? Was that the fat one?
Was called I Think You're Fat was the name of the article. And it was based on this guy, this psychologist in Virginia, who believes that you should never lie. But he goes further. He says whatever's on your brain should come out of your mouth. Like, you know, if you're with your wife's sister and you're having fantasies, you know, tell your wife and tell the sister like that. He says that is the way to an authentic and happy life. And so I did it for a couple of months. It may be an authentic life. It is not necessarily happy. It was hell. It was just really quite
what I love about it. It is literally the life that my co-host leads every single day.
Well, there you go. This show is a very radically honest show.
Not the show necessarily, but I certainly am.
Yeah.
I either care too much to lie or not enough to lie. It's one of the two.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are good parts to it. And there are parts like, I'll give you an example of one I wouldn't do again. We were out at a restaurant and my wife saw these friends of hers from college and they were like, oh, it's so good to see you. We should all hang out and have a play date with our kids. And I had to say what was on my mind, which was, you seem like nice people, but I just have no desire to ever talk to you again. And they were understandably horrified. And my wife, of course, was hugely pissed. It was successful in that we've never seen him again. Yeah. So it did work.
Have you ever
That kind of honesty, I don't think is necessary.
How long did you keep it up?
That was like 2 months. There are good parts. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be brutal honesty. It can also be positive honesty. And it can be like, you know, saying the I love you, man. Like, you know, being like, calling up my old boss and just telling him how much he meant to me, which is very awkward. And, you know, it's not something as a repressed man I generally would do. But that kind of honesty, I thought, helped my life.
Have you ever seen The Invention of Lying with Ricky Gervais?
Love that movie.
Yeah, it's a really good movie.
That is fantastic. And yeah. It was that and Jim Carrey. Right. And yeah. This guy, I will tell you, interviewing the psychologist was the best experience of my life because you know, first of all, he was a great character. He called himself a redneck with a PhD, and he was like wasted on 8 glasses of whiskey. And he's like, he would fart. He'd say, "I think it's lying to hold back your farts." And you know, I felt I could ask him anything. It would be an insult not to ask him anything. So I asked him all about his sex life, you know, men, women, animals. And he's like, "Yeah, sure. I let my dog lick my dick once in a while." And I'm like, "Okay, that is radical honesty right there."
Wow. That's a lot. Now, speaking of dogs licking men's dicks, you also lived a year biblically, as you so put it. Now, I haven't read this book, but which part of the Bible did you live by exactly? Because if you're in the Old Testament, your kids would be in some pretty big trouble.
Well, that's true. Yeah. No, the whole point was I had no religion growing up, but I'm interested in it. And I was like, you know, what am I missing? Are there good parts or the bad parts? So I'm going to follow every rule in the Bible and see what works and what doesn't. So I, you know, the 10 commandments, those, you know, love your neighbor, that kind of stuff. But also all the hundreds, literally hundreds of rules that don't get a lot of publicity. And like you say, children, you know, if your child is impudent, you can kill them. Now, you can stone them to death.
There's another question. Did you make your wife, the week she was on her period, sleep in a tent 7 miles away?
Not a tent, but I will tell you, I definitely went with the menstruation stuff.
Really?
And oh yeah, I was doing everything. And this was interesting because if you take Leviticus really literally, you're not supposed to touch a woman when she's menstruating.
Right.
But it goes further than that. It says if a menstruating woman sits on a seat, then the seat becomes impure. And my wife found that offensive. So she sat in every seat in our apartment. And I had to stand for like the year. I got a little like my own little portable seat. Yeah. So that I
did you lie down on the ground or anything, or was she scooting her butt across the ground?
She didn't do that. But
that's
that
what
would
I would
be.
Have done.
But I will tell you, the Bible is, you know, it's not a feminist document, but it does also say that men, you shouldn't touch men for a day after they ejaculate. So I, you know, whenever a friend of mine would go to shake my hand, I would be like, "Well, have you ejaculated in the last 24 hours?" Mm-hmm. I was hanging out with a lot of new dads, so not a lot of them were doing ejaculating on a regular basis. So I was pretty safe.
You would never be able to touch me.
But yeah, no, it's a little awkward.
I pound off like 3 to 5 times a day.
Yeah, yeah. So you'd never be able to shake Dan's hand, touch him, be anywhere near
which
him.
Which is fine, because I don't like being touched anyways.
Yeah, so you're good on that. What did your wife say about this? Is what I was always curious about, because I was like, dude, this guy's getting divorced. Like, did you stay with the same person? Because I remember reading these shit. I remember reading them back as far as like 2004 or 5, I think. Did your wife stay with you for all of this shit?
She did. She did. I mean, she gets a lot of letters saying, you know, how great she is and what an idiot I am. So that helps. A bunch of readers suggested I do a month where I'm just do whatever she says, like, you know, the ultimate whipped man, I think it was called. It was called Whipped was the article. So I did do that. And, you know, so she got her month of foot massages, Kate Hudson movies and things like that. So, you know, she
you win some, you lose some, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's actually a new documentary coming out, or it's a podcast called Whipped. It's Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
Yep.
Because he's turned into a giant fucking pussy.
It's crazy. He's not even the same human being anymore.
He said, "I don't understand the First Amendment."
Yep.
And that's exactly why we beat the Christ out of you guys 244 years ago. You dumb fuck. Get out of here.
Yeah, because, I mean, those guys have like a podcast now, and they're doing all of the things. God, it's my wife hates Meghan Markle more than life itself.
Oh, so I'm looking
really?
At the,
oh yeah.
I'm looking at the year of living biblically. It wasn't just, even standard Christianity, right? Like you've jumped around from different sects of Christianity and some other religions as well. Or how did that work?
Yeah, basically, I was just following mostly the Old Testament. Mm. I mean, I spent some time, I embedded myself with the Amish for a few days, and the, you know, I went down to Jerry Falwell's church. I got to see. Oh, and this I was very proud of.
You're not
allowed to
touch dudes at all at Jerry Falwell School.
No, ever. Not at all. Yeah.
What's that?
You're not allowed to touch dudes at Jerry Falwell School. Not at ever.
All. Oh, yeah. Well, no, I'll tell you, a friend of mine, after my book, he decided to spend a semester at Liberty University. He went from Brown University, like the most liberal school around, to Liberty. And it was just crazy reading his experience. Cause yeah, you can't watch R-rated movies. You can't touch someone of the opposite sex, much less the same sex. So when you're on a date, like you have to do something called gazing. Like that's their version of heavy petting, is look into each other's eyes really deeply.
So now in Mormonism, there's something called soaking. Are you familiar with this?
No, what's that?
Soaking is a version of premarital sex that's not sex. You just insert your penis inside there, but you don't thrust.
You're not allowed to thrust.
You just soak.
I had not heard that. That's interesting.
If you don't, well, it's like with snakes, how they can detect movement and stuff. If you just be really still, God can't tell you're fucking.
Yeah.
That is interesting. So, well, I did read. I did once an article on, like, you know, mating rituals through the ages, and I do kind of like in colonial times the bundling. You know what that is, where like you and your fiance are fully clothed and you're put in a sack and just tied up.
Yeah.
And so you can grind, and you know you can do. It's basically sanctioned dry humping.
What? What kind of sack is it? Is it just
burlap?
Like a
Yeah, I'm assuming it's, you know, it's not Patagonia.
It comes from an old medieval ritual where when a daughter was being married off, the groom and his entire family would stay in their castle or whatever the night before or the week before to celebrate and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
And the night before the wedding, they would sew her up into a burlap sack or something so she couldn't get out, or both of them. So it'd keep them in place so they couldn't get to each other to fuck before the wedding.
No way.
It's the dumbest shit of all time.
This was portrayed in the film The Patriot.
Oh, with Mel Gibson.
Yeah, Heath Ledger and his girl get bundled or whatever it's called. Yeah.
Ah,
that's right, and they put the blue shit in her mouth.
Yeah. What's the blue shit?
It's like blue ink. Like you give them tea that has blue ink in it, and then you can see if they've been making out in the morning because it stains his teeth as well.
No way.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Which is funny because in my world, my dick would have been blue.
Yeah, obviously.
And my butt.
Yeah, well, and hers.
Well, it depends on the time of year, if it's ass-eating season. Although I don't know if there was an ass-eating season back then. You had to take off 4 or 5 different articles of clothing just to get to your underwear.
Yeah.
Much less getting ready to fuck. Can you imagine? You see all these stupid sex scenes in movies now where dudes are throwing each other, are throwing women around, and fucking they fuck in a broom closet out in public. You never could have done that back in the day.
No.
The
no.
colonial garb was not made for quickies.
Too many layers.
Yeah.
Too many layers.
And I've got another question. Maybe you can do a month on this. I want to know, in all the movies and all the quickie sex scenes in public, especially in movies, where'd all the cum go?
Well.
Is this woman just walking around? Like, she doesn't have any panties on.
No.
They fuck in a goddamn elevator or something. He blows inside of her, and then she walks away without shit dripping down her leg. No, that's not how life works.
Unless
they have some kind of anti-gravity cum.
It's panties, you know, obviously.
No, but they're not. That's what I'm saying. They take the panties off and dude sticks in his pocket and walks away. Homegirl's blasted full of jizz.
Oh, yeah. I'm assuming she went somewhere after that. Obviously, I would not spend a month of your life on that, AJ.
I would.
No, maybe a few days just to, yeah. Well, I will tell you, I once got one of my fan letters that I was excited about was... an actor, a porn star, a male porn star said that I should do a month as a porn star. And he is a multiple AVN award winning porn star. And he's like, yeah, I can get you in.
What's the guy's name?
Is it Small Hands?
I will tell you, I thought it was fun and exciting. And then I did a little research, and his specialty, you know, I'm not a prude, but his specialty kind of freaked me out. It was, women would be giving him a blowjob and then choke and vomit on his member. And
oh, yes. Shit. What is the name of that? Facial penetration?
No, it's brutal something.
Yes. Hot Bob, look that up. It's called, we have a producer who will find that.
Sure. Thank you for not making me look
facial up. Obliteration or something like that. The reason why we know this is one of our co-hosts dated a porn star. And so when he came out with it on the show and he was talking about, you know, dating this porn star or whatever, obviously her name got out there and they were like, hey, is this your girlfriend by any chance? And it was the website like facialobliteration.com and it was the same, exactly what you're describing. And it was, I mean, tears, mascara, you know, everything, all of the things coming out of her mouth and eyes. And you were just like, right. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, it is an interesting ethical point. Like, I guess if...
I think it was facialabuse.com.
If the woman or receiver likes that, I guess I have no ethical problem with it. I just can't imagine that they would. But maybe I'm just a prude.
Well, it depends on the people you date, you know? Dan was in the military. I went to Ohio State. Like,
those are basically the same thing in his eyes.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like disgusting wise goes. So, yeah, I mean, we could take you down a weird dark trail that would just be...
Well, can I actually ask you something from the military? Because I had a friend who covered the Iraq War, like way back. And he told me about a ritual that I had never heard of called mushrooming. And it was when one of your
you can say any of the words you want on this show, by the way.
Yeah. You can say dick, penis, well, privates, whatever you
when
want.
When another soldier, a friend or a foe, was sleeping, you would dip your penis in ketchup and then thwack it on his forehead, leaving a mushroom shaped mark.
There's a lot of that kind of stuff that happens. I didn't experience anything like that in particular, but there is
I did. Yeah, my college. I can fill you all in on that.
Okay, well, he wasn't asking you. So anyways, there's mostly what you see are guys trying, like, pulling their dick and balls out of their pants and trying to get people to look at it, and then you call them gay for looking at your dick and balls and call them a meat gazer, basically.
Interesting.
It's really stupid.
Yeah.
I would say more than hitting other people with your penis, you probably, like, backhand people in their balls more, in my experience. I've never heard of... people do it. That's probably a Marine Corps thing, to be honest, because they're of all the branches of the military, even though it was the Navy represented in YMCA, yeah. I'm pretty sure the Marine Corps is the gayest of all the services. I mean if I had to guess, I don't know if there's a metric for that. What's the WRC plus for gayness in the Marine Corps, Bob? Any idea? Probably 110.
Well, you know, if the average is 100, I'm guessing they're a cool 140.
That's a Hall of Fame level right there.
Yeah, that's nice. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of weird shit happens is the point. You can't really, there aren't a whole lot of lines that don't get crossed for a number of reasons. One, because you're thrust into this weird ass situation where it's a bunch of different cultures colliding all at the same time. Not just racial and religion, but also people from Kentucky, people from upstate New York, people from California, right? It's odd. When you get all these people in the same room and expect them to be on the same page and do the same shit every single day. So the letting off steam from all that, it manifests itself in some very interesting ways.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
You should go do
Thank
that.
You.
You should go spend
Good
a month.
To know.
You should go spend a month as a drill sergeant.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't that be better than being the one being drilled, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to go through basic training. Fuck that.
Yeah.
No.
No.
What's the worst part of basic training?
Boredom, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. It's the worst part of being in the military in general is boredom.
Well, I will tell you, I always think of that. There was an Onion article about like a realistic military video game. And it was like, yeah, guys leaning against the tank and smoking cigarettes and playing cards.
Yeah, that's about right. I was an infantryman, and mostly what I did was get yelled at and cut grass, to be honest. And about 10% of the time, we would actually do our jobs. Maybe. Now, probably not even 10% of the time, to be honest.
Yeah, and you want to do some wild-ass shit, join a fraternity for a month. I'm sure that's been pitched to you, obviously.
Yeah, but you can't get away with any. I don't think they would do it because the Greek system has been so under fire the last 15 years.
It's almost gone.
They're not going to let a journalist in there if they're actually having fun.
We did, and that was the worst mistake of my life.
Oh, really? Yeah, what happened?
On accident. We used to hold this thing called Reggae Fest every year. And our front yard could hold about 20,000 people. And yeah, it was crazy. It was the old governor's mansion at Ohio State. And there's a guy that came in, about 45 years old, tall, skinny.
That wasn't a tip off.
Here's the thing. So he's tall, skinny, beard, everything. And he goes, hey, is it cool if I join your college party, kids? You know, and you're just like, what the fuck, bro? No. And he goes, but I'm a reporter for Rolling Stone magazine. And we were like, oh, are you? Great. Come on in. So we fuck with this dude.
Didn't Stanley McChrystal make the mistake too?
I think so. Yeah. But we fuck with this dude all night long. I mean, to the point where we're riding him around the party like a horse, feeding this guy drugs. Like, you name it, we did it to this fucking guy, right? Because it was the dorkiest. Like, it looked like a goddamn near homeless person. And I was just like, yeah, who cares? Who gives a shit? Party's over. It was out of control. And then 4 months later, it was on the cover with Trent Reznor for a Nine Inch Nails album. And it was like, out of control, Ohio State University fraternity. And he described every single thing in this article. And then we ended up getting thrown off campus.
No. So did you think he was a Rolling Stone reporter? You thought he was full of shit?
None of us. So we thought he was full of shit.
What, did you think he was the kid from Almost Famous or something? Obviously, he was somebody.
No, it looked like, because Ohio State is so big, you know, 65,000 people, like, it just looked like a homeless dude or somebody who was just trying to get into a fraternity party. You know, at no point did it look like any journalist or whatever. And, like, he didn't really talk that much throughout the night, so it's not like... We got to know him, but I don't know if he was so freaked out too at what he was seeing. But we just relentlessly fucked with this guy over and over and over again. And nothing popped up for 4 months. And then boom, it was right on the cover. And luckily, I had just graduated, I think like 2 days before. So they were like, hey, what's going on? What happened? And I was like, bro, I'm out of here. I don't know. I don't know anything that's going on. And they got thrown out for 5 years. But to Dan's point, that this is why, and this is what's happening to the Greek system, like all the way around, is you can't do any of the fun things anymore because there's fucking rules or cell phones or everything's so PC or I drank too much and threw up and now I want to file a lawsuit. And you can't really have that kind of fun anymore.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I don't think that's going to be a viable article. And I don't go undercover very much at all. The one time I did was... very early on, like this was like 15, 20 years ago, I looked a lot like this sort of B-list actor named Noah Taylor, who was in a movie called Shine. Do you remember that movie about the pianist?
We'll put him up. We'll put Noah Taylor
Noah
on the
Taylor
screen.
Noah Taylor was in Peaky Blinders as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was getting all this Oscar buzz, and it turned out I looked exactly like him. And we both had this very long, scraggly hair and big, thick, like Orville Redenbacher glasses. It was not a good look for either of us. But he turned out, we found out he was not going to the Academy Awards. And I was working at Entertainment Weekly at the time. So they sent me undercover, like, what's it like to be a star, be a Hollywood star at the Academy Awards? Because I got, you know, a tux and I got out of the limo and I was just like, the paparazzi went nuts. Like Will Smith told me he was a fan. Chris Farley, who's almost, you know, still alive there. He was a big fan. It was like 3 hours of the most ass kissing I've ever had. And I knew deep down I was not this guy, but still my ego was like, I really am the greatest person alive. So you can see how these Hollywood people, you know, they get warped. I got warped in like 3 hours. Imagine a lifetime of ass kissing.
Yeah, we're going to put that picture in picture up there. Would you say that was a good look for you? And I apologize
really sharp.
For saying that.
Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. I really don't know you know what I think it was? I think it was, I happened to grow my hair long out of laziness at about the same time that in New York, like, there's such a glut of such a dearth of single men that I was starting to get a lot of dates just because I was a man. And somehow I was like, oh, yeah, this look is working. So I kept it, even though it was absolutely atrocious.
Were you married at the time?
No, I was single.
Why but, not exploit know. That to the maximum? Like try to fuck like whoever won's best supporting actress or something.
Yeah, no, it didn't work that way. I mean, I will tell you the most, it didn't always work. Like I went up to the guy who was my co-star, Jeffrey Rush, mm-hmm. who was in Shine.
Yeah.
So the guy, so he actually knew that I wasn't this Noah Taylor, but I was on such a high. I went up to him and in my fake Australian accent, like, which sounded more like a Lucky Charms leprechaun. I was like, hello, Jeffrey, it's me. And he just looked at me like, what the fuck? And he backed away. He was like so disturbed and uncomfortable. And yeah, that was a hugely awkward moment in my life. Like top 10 awkward moments.
Did they pan to you in the audience at all?
No, but I did get on, like a bunch of TV journalists wanted to interview me as I walked down the red carpet. So I remember like Chris Connell, is that his name?
From MTV.
Yeah,
he was big. He's like, Noah, come here. And I was like, I didn't want to like, you know, actually, maybe I should have, but I didn't want to.
I would have ruined this guy's reputation. I would have said all kinds of weird shit about the earth being flat. Maybe like denied the Holocaust or something just to fuck this dude's life.
That would have been an interesting experiment.
Well,
I did go on. I went on like Norwegian TV because I'm like, who's going to watch that? And I said, like, he was trying to be like this upscale actor. And I was like, yeah, I just want to do a disaster movie. I just want to do like, you know, action movies nonstop. So I did a little of that, but I didn't go the full Monty like you.
That's fucking hilarious, dude.
I wouldn't have been able to help myself.
No, me neither. Like, I would have gone the max level with that, like Coke and the whole thing. So, God, that's hilarious. Another book you wrote was The Two Kings, Elvis and Jesus.
Oh, yeah, that's old. That one.
Super old, but like it was so wild. What made you compare the two and why? Just because you thought it was hilarious?
Same hair.
Well, that I was actually an Elvis fan. I still like the movies, like them. So and I was reading the biography. It was the memoir of Elvis's hairdresser. And Elvis's hairdresser said that he was with Elvis and maybe they were tripping on something. I don't know. But Elvis looked up in the sky and saw a cloud that looked like Jesus. And then it looked like Elvis. And he announced to his hairdresser, I think I'm the second coming. I think I am Jesus Christ. And I read that and I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. Let me see if there's any truth to it. So then I just did, you know, I read everything about and found all of the eerie similarities between Elvis and Jesus. Like, you know, Elvis was the Lord Shepherd and Jesus was the Lord Shepherd and Elvis dated Sybil Shepherd, that kind of thing. You know, it was basically one joke that I was able to stretch out into a book, which I really don't know how I did. But it did get me condemned by Pat Robertson. So that was something.
There it is. That's all you want in this life, really, is to be condemned by Pat Robertson.
Yeah, me and Madonna were on the same segment.
Pat Robertson's still alive, by the way. Have you seen
him? Is he? Yeah. I was about to say RIP.
He's like 300 years old, and he's sitting there like hunched over like an old troll in his chair like, we've got to do something about these gays.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, you should probably just die.
Yeah. No, he's going to live. Those fuckers live forever, dude.
Well, he's a billionaire probably. I mean, they've been robbing dumb and elderly people for years now.
Yeah, I mean, you ever thought about evangelicals?
Put your fingers up to your head like this and say, God's telling me for you to write me a personal check for $2,000 right now.
Yeah.
Here's the things I could do with it.
Yeah.
And then also,
well, I did go down during my year of living biblically. I did spend some time with the Jerry Falwell folks, not with the Pat Robertson. And it was interesting. I mean, it was more nuanced than I thought, you know, because I disagree with them. I think they're homophobic. You know, their creationism is ridiculous. But I also learn, you know, everything is gray. Nothing is black and white. And they do have, you know, they do have some morality, caring for the poor and that kind of thing. So I didn't want to, I think PJ O'Rourke said, like, you know, attacking, making fun of evangelicals is like shooting cows with an AK-47 is just too easy. Mm-hmm. So I did try to see that there were some good parts. There were some parts that were redeeming, even though I disagree with 99% of what they say.
Yeah, because the uproar in the last couple of days was that they let Joel Osteen on. Was it the Today Show? Yeah, Today Show.
Oh, yeah.
To promote his book or whatever the hell he had coming
his
out.
His book is called Hurricane? Go fuck yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You're not staying in my house, bitch.
Well, can I tell you, I almost worked with Joel Osteen, and I had to put my foot down and say no. And it was, so The Year of Living Biblically was optioned like 14 times for movies and TV shows. At one point, Marlon Wayans was going to play me. It really? Ended up being a sitcom on CBS for about 8 weeks, and it was terrible. It was just a shit show. But
you said Marlon Wayans was going to play you?
Yeah, he was going to play me. So there you go.
You don't look that much.
I think they look very close. Marlon's been on the show before. You guys look very similar. So
yeah, you know him. So yeah. Well, anyway, they at one point it was going to be a reality show. And the producers pitched me on it like, yeah, it'll be really cool because we'll show the subtlety. We'll show the good parts of the Bible and the bad parts, and that it's not, you know, all monolithic. And I was like, oh, that sounds really good. Well, cut to 6 months later, we are literally pitching Spike Network, like whatever it was called. Like,
yeah, Spike. Spike TV.
On the Bible Olympics, which was a bunch of men, like shirtless hunky men, running down a mountain with stone tablets like Moses, like who can get to the bottom fastest. And I was like, oh, this is like a parody of what Hollywood is like. I am living a parody. Yeah. And then that didn't work out. So then they were like, oh, well, Joel Osteen just joined whatever it was, William Morris or whatever their agent was. And he's like, and he might be interested. And I was like, oh, I like selling out as much as anyone, but that's just a bridge too far. I cannot. Yeah, I can't do it.
I mean, but you did work but you visited Ken Ham for one of these, right?
Oh, yeah. You know about him?
Yeah, I know. I know everything about religion.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ken Ham is.
Well, tell him your background so he understands.
It doesn't matter. Just assume that I know all of it.
He's got a PhD in theology.
I don't have a PhD in theology.
What is it?
I have an undergraduate degree in comparative religion.
There you go.
It's not even close.
Why is that? Why are you so embarrassed by that?
It's not embarrassed. It's not relevant to the goddamn conversation. Anyways, Ken Ham, for those of you who don't know, is a creationist scientist, although he has no scientific credentials that I'm aware of. He's the guy that built and funds the Creation Museum in Kentucky, where when you walk in the fucking front door, you can see people riding dinosaurs, for example, because he gets all of his fucking information from the fucking Flintstones.
Yeah.
This guy is retarded.
Yeah, he is hardcore, and he is scary. Yeah. And it was interesting, though, because when I visited the Creationist Museum, like, I got to see that, you know, being a radical is a relative term, like a fundamentalist. Because like these guys, there was one guy who worked there who was a biblical physicist. So he had all of these theories. Like he's like, now we know that the universe is like 15 billion light years big, but it's only 6,000 years old. So I've spent a lot of time figuring out how this can be. And he had this theory about like time zones. It was similar to like when you're on a jet and you go to different time zones. I'm like, that is such an incredible waste of human mental energy. It is shocking. But he was like making fun of the flat earthers. And he's like, oh, those flat earthers, those guys are idiots. And I was like, all right, well, I guess you know, everyone, moderation is a relative term.
AJ, we got some sponsors who put this shit wagon on the air. First and foremost is ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. 30% off everything in the entire store. All of my new shit just got to my house from Ghostbed. Rich from Ghostbed will actually be here tomorrow. And we're going to have him on some of the shows on the old Tetherball Academy Media Channel, and you'll be able to see him. I have not seen him in real life, but I'm curious as the man behind Ghostbed. I want to get him out here. and spread his legs on one of those things. Maybe I took that too far. But the savings are amazing. The bed is comfortable. So are the sheets and the pillows. Gigantic fan of ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Right now, they've got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there. And you can bundle that deal together with all of these savings, and then it'll tell you. It's got like a running calculator on there of like, hey, here's how much it is a month. It's fucking awesome. Best in the biz, in my opinion. I've got them in every room of my house. I love them. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today and get yours. Next up, we've got one of our faves. If you're in the bed, you might as well go to getroman.com/drinkingbros now to get $15 off your first month. Yeah. Talking about a little ED. If you got squeaky doors, clogged sinks, finicky engines, vroom, vroom, get that wiener excited again. You got to take care of it. You got to take care of what's going on in the bedroom, dude. Go to getroman.com/drinkingbros now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation, ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan if medication is appropriate. It ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/drinkingbros and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to getroman.com/drinkingbros now. You'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time to take care of your ED. And remember, get started today and you'll save $15 on your first order of ED treatments. We're so very proud of you. And then go to killcliff.com. While you're there, killcliffcbd.com is combined with killcliff.com. So you're getting 20% off of everything, all of their drinks, including the CBD drinks, when you go to killcliff.com with the promo code drinkingbros, and you get free shipping. That is a huge deal when you're shipping cans. We know this because our seltzers are going to be shipping out this fall, and we're going over shipping numbers. It is a big deal to be able to ship for free. It is also a big deal to get 20% off. Joe Rogan not only has a CBD drink with those guys called the Flamin' Joe, but he's also got the Ignite with them as well. Now, their CBD drinks have 25 milligrams in every single can. You will not piss hot. There's no THC in these whatsoever. Those things are, Jesus Christ, man, they sell out every single time. Best in the biz, but just know that if you're out there and you got to take a drug test, you will not piss hot. There is no THC in these cans. Killcliff is the only name you can trust in this. Go to killcliff.com today. Promo code Drinkin' Bros for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you, AJ.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Is it hard not to just be like, hey, dude, you're just full of shit?
Yeah, you got to compare those. You should have done the radical honesty and the biblical thing at the same time.
Yeah,
that is true. Well, I was honest. I'm like, I'm an evolution, but I guess one challenge again is there a way to see any positive? And sometimes no, but I will tell you one thing I liked about the creationists, just to give them, is that like they believed that the world is 6,000 years old. We're all from Adam and Eve. So that's only like a few, generations, like a couple hundred generations. So in their mind, like we really are all close cousins. And that does give it a sort of like, you know, even though they hate some of their cousins who are gay and they hate they hate a lot of other cousins. But the point is, the positive spin is, you know, humans are all one big family. So that is one. Can we have that point of view without adopting the crazy creationist point of view?
Yeah, I like how you're able to see some of the positives in this.
There's no positive in any of that shit.
Well, I know what you're talking about. Like, there's got to be something, some redeeming, like, ballpoint pin worth of something to get them in order to believe in what they're believing in, right? Otherwise, it's just an act and a front.
No, they get taught this shit as children before they're able to mount a sophisticated defense to it. That's what happens. That's nothing true.
But how do you change their mind? Like, I do think that just like arguing with them is never going to change their mind.
I agree.
For sure. It's no one will defend a lie harder than somebody that's wasted their entire lives believing it, right? That's why people defend shitty spouses and shitty kids to the public, or their shitty fucking sports team. The Eagles are going to do it this year. No, they're not.
No.
And they're not going to do it next year either.
Sure aren't.
But they have done it, though, and the Falcons have not, so I apologize to you, sir. Fake Dan is one of our producers off screen here, big Eagles fan. What I wanted to ask you about was during your time at Esquire, I feel like there was a bunch of articles getting optioned for movies left and right out of there and TV shows, like you said. What was the craziest from one of your colleagues that became like a huge movie?
Well, Tom Juneau wrote an article about Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers. And so that became the Tom Hanks movie. I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
But they changed, like, Tom, you know, they turned him into an alcoholic who hit his dad, which I don't think I don't know if he's an alcoholic, but I don't think so. And I know he didn't hit his dad, but you know, so they are, it's like they did with my Bible book and turning it into the Bible Olympics. Like, it is crazy. The twists and what they end up doing. I mean, I had one that was optioned once by Samuel L. Jackson. That was the one of the highlights of my life. Samuel Jackson called me to tell me he liked my article and he was optioning it.
Hey,
and,
motherfucker, let's do a movie together.
Well, he did say, the one thing I remember him saying, the article was about sort of raising three kids when I'm not, you know, I'm not the manliest guy, but like watching the testosterone when they're like, you know, 3 years old and like, you know, their love of like, you know, shooting each other with fake guns. And that's what Samuel L. Jackson said, was like, that's what he related to. He's like, I love that part about guns because I fucking love guns as a kid. I just love guns. I was like, all right, then. I'm glad it resonated.
That's hilarious. I've got one crazy Samuel L. Jackson story. It's pretty funny. My first
hilarious. I've got in
my first year in L.A., I'm getting feedback on mine. Might be coming through there.
Fine. Might be coming through there.
Do you have the volume on?
Do you have the volume on?
All right. Well,
there's no reason that
I'm going to have to go without cans, but I'm only hearing myself. The craziest Samuel Jackson story that I have was I was in Los Angeles. It was my first year there, and I was kind of like bartending at this guy's house. It sounds weird, but it was like this huge mansion that was like 18,000 square feet. And yes, I was definitely a bartender in this house. It was a gigantic bar, right? And so anybody that came to the door, they're like, hey, you've got to answer it. And it was this dinner party, and it was for Samuel L. Jackson. So Samuel L. Jackson asked his agent, he said, who's coming to the dinner party tonight? And the agent started listing off people and, you know, the people that he thought were interesting and everybody else. And he goes, he came to Chris Cooper, and he goes, ah, shit, Chris Cooper, I blew his motherfucking leg off in A Time to Kill. And it was, he was a normal conversation for him. Like, it was just, you know, hey, what's for dinner tonight? And I was like, holy shit, he really is like that. And he's hilarious and cool and funny. And I can't imagine getting a phone call out of nowhere for him to do one of your projects, what that would have been like for you. How long did the conversation last?
What's that? Oh, just like 15 minutes. But yeah, you know, another in top 10. I was just telling, this may be an awkward segue, but I was just telling someone about another one of my favorite celebrity interactions, which was when I was at Esquire. I interviewed George Clooney. And the gimmick of the article was, you know, he never went on the internet. So I was going to show him all of like the worst stuff on the internet about him, about like, you know, how he had testicle surgery and all that.
So it was like pre-reading your own mean tweets kind of situation.
Yes, yeah. It was long before. It was sort of like a precursor to that.
Yeah, that's good. Those are funny as shit, by the way.
It was great. It was. I love. And he was a good sport. Yeah. Like he read all of the, and like those. There was one site that had all of the women he supposedly slept with, and he just went yes, 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 no, sort of yes, no, yes. So, but at the end, he's like, "So what else can you show me? Like, what's the weirdest thing on the internet?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know." I asked the Esquire tech guys, and they said I should show you Two Girls, One Cup. Oof, and he's like, what's that? And wow. I'm like, I'm not showing that to you. Yeah. And it had just come out, like it was pretty new. And he's like, no, I can take it. I'm an adult. I can take it. And I was like, I really don't want it. He's like, show it. So I'm like, fine. So I pull it up and it starts out fine. So the two girls are kissing and he's like, this is not so bad. And then like, you know, 8 seconds in, the shit goes down literally. Yeah. He was like, oh my God. And he ran out of the room and he was like, I wish if I had been videotaping the reaction shot, like I could have, you know, that would have gone viral.
Doing that relatively, within like
and then he made the best part is he made his publicist watch it. He's like, Stan, come in here, you gotta watch this. And he made his the publicist was like, oh. So yeah, he was fun to interview.
That's pretty brutal.
Two Girls, One Cup. I'm trying to think of where I was because it's one of those, you know where you were when you saw it.
If that's true, then you wouldn't have to think about where you were.
Well, here's the thing.
I have no idea where I was when I first saw it because it was 30 fucking years ago.
When you said that at the beginning, though, it triggered me into thinking, you're right. I saw the reaction videos first. Yeah. So I didn't see the actual video because the reaction videos on YouTube were massive.
They were way bigger than the actual video.
Yeah.
It was like so
and more reaction. Entertaining, I find.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the mean tweets thing has always been super funny. Even people I don't like that get up there and read mean stuff about themselves, there's a humanizing factor to that that makes you like them more.
Yeah, for sure.
Go ahead, Giorgio.
September 23rd, 2006, in school suspension, Chapel Hill High School.
No way. Is that real?
Two girls, one cup.
No way. What'd you watch it on?
Did you show the ISS teacher?
Yeah.
What? No. He was sleeping or doing crack in the back. One of the two.
Well, you smoke crack.
How'd you get busted?
Yeah.
No. I never unsaw it. And then we locked everyone's computer onto Tub Girl.
Oh, I've done Tub. Tub Girl is a Korean woman who's got her legs kicked up over the back of her head inside of a tub, and she's firing a big fountain of liquid diarrhea into her own face, basically. There's also the BME Pain Olympics.
Yeah.
Which is where the most acute version of this was a guy who had. He had his dick and balls laid out on a cutting board, and he started fucking cutting his dick into pieces and nailing parts of it to the board and stuff.
Like a hot dog. Yeah. And then he cooked it, and then he ate it, and that was the one that lives with me forever. That and the horse. What was the horse one called?
Oh, the horse is where a guy's trying to get a horse to fuck him, and the horse is a little bit too aggressive and fucks him all the way up through his esophagus, basically.
I remember. You know who sent me that? Yeah. This is a little badge of honor for me. Is Chrissy Teigen. Chrissy Teigen sent me the
No way.
Is this before or after she deleted 65,000 tweets off Twitter?
Yeah, are you friends with
way
Chrissy?
Way before. That was another one of the highlights of my life because I interviewed her. And I guess John Legend had read my book on the Bible. But she didn't. So I was interviewing her just as an Esquire journalist. And somehow we started talking about religion. And she's like, did you ever hear that book about that guy who lived by all the rules of the Bible? And I was like, as a matter of fact, I have heard of that book. That was me. So that was exciting. And then she sent me, I guess, as a thank you, the horse video.
No shit.
Well, that's
I talk about her all the time because I hate her, but she's one of those people. Well,
hopefully
where
that humanizes her a little for you.
Well, no, it does. So that's who she used to be.
She spent all of the last 2 weeks telling some girl to kill herself, though. So that's not very humanizing.
No. But here's the thing.
That did not reflect well.
That's
can I just say one thing about that? She said in her apology, she said, "I hate the person I used to be. I was a sad and pathetic person." And I feel that way about myself all the time. I hate myself. If I met myself as a 22-year-old, I'd be like, that guy is such a dick.
Yeah. But that wasn't 2 weeks ago. So
No. But her tweets were from
2017.
It
wasn't that long ago.
No, it was right? like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was 10 years ago. Really? Yeah. Okay. It was a while ago. It's funny, man. I've done a deep dive with my wife on her because we hate her so much. But it's one of those things where she used to do hilarious shit, like you were saying. Like, that's who she used to be. The problem is when you make your name off of that, right? And everybody thinks you're this hilarious, you know, person on Twitter and everything else, and then you have kids and do a 180 and you want to be this responsible mom and sell cookbooks and all that shit, you can be a dirtbag forever and be fine, right? But if you switch it up that much, people will come after you if you start telling them what to do. So you kind of have to stay in the lane that you're in. I mean, it's hard to change that late in life. Have you, versus what you used to write about and do, have you changed at all? Are you still doing the same crazy shit?
I think I would say I'm still doing the crazier. I don't know. You tell me. Like, I would, my last book was kind of, something that you could send your grandma. Like, there wasn't as much menstruation jokes. Like, it was, but I still stand by it. It was about gratitude, because I feel like my default is not gratitude. My default is like anger and annoyance, sort of the Larry David versus Mr. Rogers. So this was an experiment where I went around the world and thanked every single person who had anything to do with my morning cup of coffee, the farmer who grew the beans, the barista, but the truck driver, the guy who made the road for the truck driver, so I thanked literally 1,000 people. And some of them were like, what's going on? Is this like a pyramid scheme? Like, I'm creeped out. But a lot of them were like, this is, I remember I called the woman who did pest control for the warehouse where the coffee beans are stored. And I'm like, I know this is weird, but I just want to thank you for keeping the insects out of my coffee. And she's like, well, that is weird, but thank you. I don't get a lot of positive feedback. So I don't know, maybe I'm more kind, kinder and gentler, but I still hopefully do take it to the extreme and make it as bizarre and entertaining as possible.
Well, I mean, do you do it more or less like a method actor, because you have to like kind of live the life to write better? Or do you think you would get the same writing just interviewing it?
Like, no, I do feel like I like that idea of the method actor. And I do feel you have to go through some of the it was super awkward thanking some of these people. Like, it was, and my new book that I'm working on now, there's some, like, some super humiliating things that I've done. This one is about my love of puzzles and games, like of all kinds, like, crosswords, but also, any kind of puzzle. And as part of it, my family and I, we competed in the World Jigsaw Puzzle Championships in Spain. And we like flew there and spent like, 8 hours doing jigsaw puzzle, and we just got our ass kicked. It was humiliating. We were 39th out of 40 countries. We like, if our country had not all, I feel our reputation is so low, we didn't do that much more damage. But Russia, these four Russian women from Siberia, it was unbelievable. Like, they finished in like 3 hours, and everyone else was still, and could be doping because they're Russian, but they were amazing.
Yeah.
So
I don't know what kind of PEDs you take to be better at jigsaw puzzling.
Well, I thought about doing that, and I should have.
I've got a TRT company if you need help with that.
Yeah,
you want? Oh.
Yeah, so we'll get you all jacked up. You'll have traps like all the way up to your ears, and you'll be putting jigsaw puzzles together faster than any human being's ever seen, even faster.
Can I get sponsored for next competition?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yep. We got to wear the T-shirt though, and then you have to get all jacked up. So we're gonna make you all do right. that. Obviously, yeah.
The T-shirt is just like the base is just giant balls, and there's a huge dick coming out of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
well,
you know,
go over well with the jigsaw community.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're a loose group. You would think so, right?
Well, one would think so.
People that spend that much time putting puzzles together, they're trying to distract themselves from figuring out something else in their lives.
Yeah.
Probably, right? So chances are they've got some weird tendencies, I would guess.
One would think. One would think. We've got a friend who likes to jigsaw, who likes to do puzzles. Mm-hmm. But in Siberia, you've got nothing else to do. So.
Yeah, there's nothing else to do. I will say I studied the history of jigsaws, and my favorite were the genre of porno jigsaw puzzles, which, like, I was like, you know, if you're going to, you have to work for it. You know, you have to, there's some delayed gratification. You have to put the puzzle together and then you get your masturbation on.
Yeah, it's almost like having internet in 1991, where it's just you wait for one picture to slowly go down the thing. And you're like, oh, shit, tits. This is amazing. And then maybe a vagina, maybe a bottom suit. And then your whole world is fucked up. So now you've got a crazy life, man. It's nuts. Now's the point in the show where we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you, helped you become the person you are today. Who'd you like to give the drinking bro of the week to?
You know what? I'm going to give it to one of my first bosses at the Antioch Daily Ledger Post Dispatch, Brentwood News. That was literally the name of the paper because it was like eight papers of 50 people. 50 circulation each, and they had to combine them, and now it's dead. But his name was Ken Mariansky, and he just taught me more about writing than almost anyone else. And you know, he doesn't get the recognition that he should. He's brilliant. So thank you, Ken.
Do you talk to him still?
I've talked to him a couple of times in the last, as part of my thank you book. Like I reached out to him to thank him, you know, because I wanted to thank the people who affected me. So yeah, thanks to him.
That's awesome. One more I'd love to chat with you about is the drop dead healthy one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So that one was just, you know, I'm not naturally in good shape. This is like 10 years ago. I wasn't fat. I was skinny fat. So like the snake that swallowed the goat type of look. Mm. And I decided I'm kind of getting in shape, but every part, I'm going to redo every part of my life. So, you know, my diet, workout, sleep, sex, going to the bathroom, had to learn to go to the bathroom properly. And I definitely, you know, I never became the healthiest person alive, which was sort of the goal of the book, but I'm still alive.
Yeah,
so,
what do you mean by going to the bathroom properly?
Properly, now, what does that mean?
When I'm in public in a bathroom stall,
yeah,
I climb up, like I have my feet up against each wall and then my hands holding onto the tops.
Yeah.
And I just shit and piss wherever it goes. Because it's more about
healthy.
Keeping me clean.
That is,
no,
well,
for real,
that,
for real, what is healthy
what is
bathroom
it?
Going? I don't understand.
Well, you know, we were evolved to squat in the fields. So, you know, the whole potty squatty thing is real. Potty, like that is it's better for you. It's faster. You don't get hemorrhoids. And at one point I bought this thing off the internet, which you put over your toilet and it sort of turns a first world toilet into a developing nations toilet. So it's just like a hole and you have to put your feet on either side of the hole.
Oh, yeah,
and
I've
go
been
that
to
way.
I've been
and
to Iraq.
I liked it. My wife was like, after a week, she's like, get this out of here. This is not.
Yeah, it's basically like a toilet seat, but it's embedded into the ground with a grate under it.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how all the bathrooms in Iraq are.
Oh, that's amazing. What a beautiful country. Did you change? Like, were you shredded after that? What happened?
Well,
I was moderately shredded. I didn't take the performance enhancing drugs, which I think I needed to. But yeah, I mean, I was in pretty good shape. I was, and I will say, I've kept some of it up. Like, I still have like my little treadmill desk, so I still answer emails. Like, I still walk, you know, for half the day. And I still, you know what has really stuck with me, I was thinking this morning, is micro goals. I feel that, you know, I'm not good if I say I have to go take a run or I have to walk 10,000 steps. Like, I got to break it down to the tiniest goal. Like, I say, all right, I'm going to put on my sneakers. I'm not guaranteeing anything else. I'm just going to put on my sneakers. And then I put them on. I'm like, all right, well, I got them on. I might as well get on the treadmill, but I'm just going to do it for a minute. No guarantees. And then I'm on it for a minute. And then I'm like, you know what? I can do this for 10 minutes. So that has been one of the most life-changing strategies is this micro goals that I've kept.
That sounds exhausting. I'm going to be honest with you. I would rather just put on a Fitbit and be like, all right, what is it? 3,000 steps? Yeah, let's go. Let's party. What about becoming a bodybuilder? Yeah, but since we're on it, what about becoming a bodybuilder? Would you ever take like D-ball and steroids and get like massive? Would your wife allow that?
She might. I mean, that one of my favorite books ever was called Muscle, about a guy. He was like a sort of a nerdy book editor, and he got mugged, and he kind of went crazy and went full roid and got huge, and he started like, he got fired from his job because he beat people up at work. And so I loved it. So I felt it had been done, but it's still fascinating.
Yeah, because I think you, how old are you now? You said what, 45?
53.
53?
Yeah, 53. Oh, I'm old.
You look great. At 53, though, getting all jacked up on steroids would be fun as shit, right?
Yeah, that's what Jeff Bezos did.
Yeah. Have you seen Bezos?
Yeah, that is interesting, isn't it? Yes. Is it, you think it's roids?
That's the only way at that age to do that, yes. But it's not just steroids. The main culprit is either HGH, which is likely because he's wealthy, or sirmorelin, which makes your body produce natural HGH.
Huh. That's the only what way about the blood of like 22-year-olds?
I'm sure that
toddler
have,
blood, yeah.
No, it's not toddler blood. I'm sure
I have a toddler. I drink his blood.
I'm sure they have. They're doing blood exchange. I mean, the dudes from Rolling Stone, both of them have been doing that for since the late 80s, I think. They go to Switzerland once a year, typically. Now you can go to Panama as well and get all pretty much over the course of a week all of your blood pulled out and younger blood put into your body.
Yeah, so right? Keith Richards used to do this. The Stones are mine.
Mick does it too, though.
Well, I mean, Keith was doing it for a different reason.
Keith's been doing it since the 80s to get so he could still do drugs and not die.
Well, basically. He would do it also because I read, I'm a gigantic fan of like rock biographies and shit like that. I've read them all, I feel like. And he would do it because his system was so used to drugs. Once he got the blood drained out, he said it was like feeling high again for the first time. And he goes, that's the feeling I miss that I'm trying to replicate. And he did it a lot. And it was just like, Jesus Christ, man.
The one thing I feel sad for Keith Richards, because I remember a few years ago, he said that he did or he wanted to snort his father's ashes and he got all kinds of shit for it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is a lovely notion. Like, I feel that's a very nice tribute for someone like Keith Richards to snort his dad.
He's doing the what he loves with the person he loves the most.
Exactly. Right? And he had to walk it back and say he was just kidding. And I think he did it.
I just did an ashes ceremony on Saturday for my grandmother. It's chunky. That's not like perfectly chopped
that's
up.
That's why
lines.
You have to use a grinder. So that's what I want my friends. That's how I want them to celebrate my life, is to
snort all your ashes.
Make brown brown. Brown brown typically is gunpowder and cocaine.
Yeah.
Right? And they give it to child soldiers to get them pumped up before war.
Oh, yeah.
But I want all of my friends to mix my ashes with cocaine, snort it all, and then go, I don't know, storm the Capitol or something. I don't know. Whatever you guys decide
again,
to do.
Again, yeah.
Whatever you guys decide to do. Burn down the DNC headquarters like Antifa in Portland. Just make it weird and violent. Actually, trolling people for no reason would be a lot funnier. And I've got an idea about that. So here's what I want to do. I'm going to go buy a bunch of shit from one CVS and then put it back on the shelves in another CVS.
Uh-huh.
Just to fuck their stock up. But nobody will get fired. It's just weird.
Yeah.
They'll spend a couple of weeks. They'll have to bring in somebody from corporate to try and figure out what the fuck happened. Nothing happened. I happened. Right? And I don't need any credit or recognition for it. I don't want to film it or anything. I just want to know that somebody out there is having a rough day because of me.
Jokes you'll never see.
Yeah.
We had a buddy of ours who used to leave like earrings in.
That's me.
Oh, was that you?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, I would buy anytime. We used to go to like Goodwill and shit to buy old used suits for some of the productions we did.
You fucking dirtbag.
And I would buy all of the earring jewelry. I would just grab a handful and buy all of it. And I would. Anytime I saw anybody's car window down in public, I would throw just one earring into it. Yeah. Just to start a fight between them and their significant other later.
That is interesting. Did you ever follow up? And you
no,
know,
there's no way to. I mean, how would I know? Unless it was, I wouldn't do it to somebody I know, because that's weird.
Dan would just do it to strangers and then walk away.
Yeah.
God, I remember hearing this story. We do some of these like goddamn podcasts. Ago, yeah. That's right. Jesus Christ. Jokes you'll never see. Clooney was one, too. Did he tell you about shit in the...
The
litter box.
He was very proud of that. He loved that one.
That's Dan.
And he was a big one. Another fan one he liked was this was when you had to actually develop cameras, but he definitely, whenever there was cameras lying around, he'd go and, you know, do a dick pic of himself. Yeah. So there are a lot of dick pics of Clooney out there.
Before camera phones were really a thing, everybody in the military had those little Sony handy cams. The ones that were like $200 or whatever.
Take
pictures and make. They did picture and video. You could do it. You take them on deployments and get cool shit. The problem is, people would leave them sitting around unsecured. That to me is, I'm at that point a parent teaching my child a lesson.
Yes.
Right. I take pictures of my dick, balls, and asshole.
Yep.
And they scroll through them later, and they remember to secure their equipment for the next time.
Yeah.
That's a menschy thing to do.
I can find a way to justify any behavior, basically.
And I think that's a great way to end the show. We love ending on a super dark note like that. And we appreciate you being here. Again, I've been reading your shit for years, man. It's weird to put a face with the dude. Again, I pictured you to be something else, but whatever, man. You know, totally kidding.
Well, I love being here. So thanks for having me. I had a great time. And I learned a lot. So it's educational.
You always do on this show. We always say we're not just podcast hosts. We're also teachers. So you're welcome for today. Totally kidding. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media and all that stuff.
Oh, the ajjacobs.com or at ajjacobs. And, you know, that's my name, AJ Jacobs.
Perfect, man. Thanks for being here. You were awesome, dude. For AJ Jacobs, D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.